Powering the Future.
Hello and a warm welcome to the listeners of Powering the Future, our podcast series wherein you will hear from industry experts and academicians on topics that impact us as an individual and as a professional. In today's podcast, we bring to you key insights on ISO 10993, Biological Evaluation of Medical Devices. We would like to begin by introducing our speaker, Dr. Shailendra Singh. Dr. Singh holds extensive experience in the field of toxicology research, regulatory affairs, quality assurance, and business development. He has been associated with TÜV SÜD since 2019, is responsible for implementation of MDR and IVDR, including process implementation, South Asia region. Without further ado, let me now hand it over to Dr. Singh for sharing insights with regards to biocompatibility testing strategy. Over to Dr. Singh.
Today, we are going to discuss on biocompatibility testing strategy and overview of risk assessment-based testing strategy. So in today's presentation, we'll be discussing on testing strategy of medical devices. Also, we'll evaluate differences in traditional and the new testing strategy. If you look at traditional approach, which is quite simple, you can simply refer matrix of ISO 10993 part 1. Based on your device application and duration, choose the test, select a CRO and perform the test, and that's how you're done. But in traditional approach, there are many challenges. First of all, it's time consuming, especially for high-risk devices or implants where long-term studies need to be done with a duration of up to 8 to 24 months or even more. Resource-intensive nature of traditional toxicity test, it needs a lot of resource in terms of performance of toxicity test. An unexpected adverse effect in human clinical trial. There might be a possibility of failures at clinical trials due to wrong extrapolation of results. Also, while looking for a potential target, number of chemicals are tested, which ultimately results in increased cost and time. So we'll give an overview of how the toxicity testing is done. So for any new or novel device, safety is evaluated based on many parameters. Few important parameters of biocompatibility evaluations we are going to discuss here, like systemic toxicity. Systemic toxicity must be evaluated for all the biomaterials which is expected to leach substances out of the device. It is quite important to evaluate toxicity by different route of administration and duration of application, species, and endpoint. Another important endpoint is histocompatibility. That must be evaluated for all the biomaterials, where leachates are expected to leach out of biomaterials, and also to evaluate whether any change in design of the device may cause any adverse effect on the tissue they are implanted in. Implantation studies done for various devices, which are to be implanted at various sites and tissues, and durations starting from 1 week till 13 weeks. Also, the duration could go up to 2 to 3 years for evaluating carcinogenic potential. Another important endpoint is hemocompatibility. Hemocompatibility is an important parameter which has to be all the device in direct or indirect contact with blood or in circulating blood. Hemocompatibility is evaluated for many parameters like hemolysis and thrombosis. It depends on various leachables of biomaterials and also the design of biomaterial. Design plays a very important role for evaluation of hemocompatibility. So now we see what is the latest testing strategy. One of the important programs is called Toxicology 21st Century. The TOX21 program is developed by OECD and ICWAM in order to find out a solution for improved toxicological evaluation by combining improved methods and latest technology tools. Improving toxicity testing methods to enable faster and more efficient evaluation of chemical effects on human health. TOX21 program also helps in developing alternative test systems that are predictive of human toxicity and dose response. Developing alternative to animal test methods, which can provide much predictive data with repeatability. It also addresses key technical limitations of current in vitro test systems and curate and characterize legacy in vivo toxicity studies, which may be waived off for many devices, even for novel devices. Establishing scientific confidence in vitro systems and integrated assay batteries. Also, we have to consider evidence-based toxicology in the latest testing strategy. Evaluation of all existing toxicology data is core of evidence-based toxicology, which combines computational toxicology like QSARs. There are many software available with huge database of structures like DEREC or OECD toolbox. Animal toxicology test could be a traditional test or maybe improved method. Also, in vitro cell-based assays, quantitative high-throughput screening and informatics, it also gives information on repeatability and reliability of the data. Human toxicity data, all actual data of clinical trials are important information and most relevant information for safety evaluation. So all these are important points that need to be considered for evidence-based toxicology. Additionally, we need to consider for evidence-based toxicology that instead of evidence tick-the-box strategy, toxicology must be evaluated based on available evidences through available databases or data evaluation by one or any available technology tools. Evaluation strategy can be dependent on types of material of devices and additives and also in different production processes. Every aspect of manufacturing process must be evaluated, since if any of these points are skipped, may have a major impact on safety of device. Since all the devices are not same safety evaluation strategy won't work for all the devices. Every device needs a tailor-made strategy for risk assessment. Now we have seen evidence-based toxicology. So it's important to evaluate all the data available and do a risk assessment. So after all evaluations are done, risk evaluation or assessment is performed based on all available information. Once we plan to do a risk evaluation, some specific data needs to be given more weightage or much emphasized. One of the most important data is clinical data, which must be given higher value than preclinical data due to its relevance to the actual data. Other important data is market surveillance data, where real-life devices use data is collected and can give a more relevant data on safety of device. Substantial equivalent devices must be considered and carefully evaluated to correlate your device with the already marketed device. It's important to compare both the device and all the parameters and considering all the endpoints like intended use, performance, safety concern, etc. Information from legacy devices must be considered for risk assessment. So now, what is a new testing strategy or the latest testing strategy? The standards have been revised recently, like ISO 10903 Part 1, Part 17, Part 18. Based on the revision, we can define a new testing strategy. And the new approach explains about various steps towards biological safety evaluation. And foremost step is chemical or material characterization. Chemical characterization should be performed in parallel with in vitro tests. It will save enough time. By the time the data of chemical characterization is available, we will also get information on in vitro toxicity. That could be useful information and a first step for risk assessment. There should be a strategy to fill out the data gap, if available, by suitable in vitro test followed by a risk assessment. So let's see what's material characterization. There are many types of materials used for making medical devices like polymers, for example, plastics, PPP, PET, PU, or elastomers like silicon rubber, metals and alloys, for example, titanium or stainless steel, ceramics like hydroxyapatite, calcium phosphate, TCP, etc. Natural macromolecules like gelatins, collagens, and likewise, there are many materials that are used for constructing a device. Hence, there should be a specific protocol for characterization of these materials and also for any unknown material. So when chemical characterization needs to be done for an already existing device, there are certain points that need to be considered or need to be referred. Developing new product design concept, change of raw material, change of supplier, like a new supplier or a new facility, or change in manufacturing process. Also, any changes in sterilization process or any changes intended use and evaluation of aging effects. So all these points need to be considered while planning chemical characterization. So it's a widely used process available now. And here I would like to discuss about some techniques that is usually in general used for material characterization. These techniques are common but not limited to. So for extractable studies, we need to refer ISO 10903 Part 18, USP 1663 or 6016-4. You can also refer FDA, CDRH, EMEA, and PQRA. The first step is to prepare right extraction. And the methods which is commonly used for extraction are reflux, SOXLET, sonication, incubation in controlled temperature conditions, agitation in controlled temperature conditions. We need to prepare both polar and non-polar extracts. The evaluation technique for extractables and leachables is basically done by fingerprinting by GCFID MS and semi-quantitative screening for both volatile and semi-volatile organic compounds by GCMS and GCMS Headspace. Semi-quantitative screening for non-volatile organic compounds by LCMS or LC-QTOF. Quantitative analysis for metals by ICP OES or ICP MS, gravimetric determination of extractables, TOC, pH, conductivity, etc. I mean, there are many methods. These are just the most important ones that are commonly used for material characterization. So once we have the data available from chemical characterization, the next step is to go for toxicological risk assessment. So we'll see what toxicological evaluation means. The objective of toxicological risk assessment is to evaluate the potential health risk associated with exposure to leachable impurities, contaminants, or other residues in medical devices. It's a structured stepwise process. When all relevant data, information are available, then a process needs to be defined for risk evaluation. It's a research-based evaluation comprises of many activities. Some are like hazard identification and data evaluation, exposure assessment, dose response analysis, risk characterization, etc. All available information on toxicology need to be evaluated collectively. There are many databases available freely and some are available with subscription. These databases can be used to extract toxicological data. Now, all the data collected should be carefully assessed for its relevance. Relevance means whether a data is relevant to material to be characterized, like data of analogs. Also for reliability, it needs to be established whether collected data is reliable. How that can be identified? It can be verified by looking at the lab where it was performed, whether the lab is accredited with GLP or other standards like ISO 17025 or any other national accreditation. However, global accreditation is given higher weightage. Also, data from published reputed journals are considered reliable. Also, the data is assessed for adequacy, means whether the data collected is adequate for evaluation, which endpoints are covered, or for which endpoint, how much data is available. So it's important to make sure that the data is adequate enough to be evaluated. And at the end of evaluation and integration of all available information, including weight of evidence, must be done. So all material characterization data and toxicological data, along with the clinical data, active market surveillance, also data from the competitor products, are evaluated together to identify any possible gaps. Each gap are identified carefully, and based on an evaluation, a testing strategy must be devised, which may waive off some of the tests of the metrics for all the data which need to be performed, could be a tailor-made to the requirements. So we'll see what are some important assessment that need to be considered for human exposure assessment. A human health risk assessment is a process to estimate the nature and probability of adverse health effects in humans who may be exposed to chemicals in contaminated environment media now or in the future. So it's a structured process, and the first step is to identify hazard. Here we examine whether a stressor has the potential. Stressor means a kind of identified chemical of concern, has the potential to cause harm to humans and or to the ecological system. And if so, under what circumstances these potential hazards? Next step is to have a dose response assessment, where we have to examine the numerical relationship between exposure and its effect. Then we have to assess the exposure assessment, which means we have to examine the frequency, timing, and level of contact with the stressor. And finally, the risk characterization. So risk characterization means we have to examine all the data. You know, we have to conclude about the nature and extent of risk from exposure to environmental assessor. Also, we have to see whether the medical device can contain certain substances known to be CMR. This should be considered in risk assessment. Reproductive and developmental toxicity should be addressed for novel materials. For materials with a known reproductive or developmental toxicity, medical devices with relevant target population, like pregnant women, or maybe medical devices where there is a potential of local presence of device materials in the reproductive organ. Additionally, we also have to see degradation information should be provided for any medical device or medical device component or any material that remains with the patient that may have a potential for degradation. So when we talk about risk-based testing strategy, there are many significant advantages. Like in vitro test, This will help us waving off many in vivo test methods. In vitro tests will not necessarily contribute to a cost reduction, but will reduce time, and also the results can be reproducible without affecting any ethics, animal ethics issues. Also, chemical characterization and toxicological evaluation, that gives a very close prediction of the possible toxicity of the identified leachables. Also, the advantage is that many tests can be waived off if we have a risk-based testing strategy. Weighing off subacute, subchronic, and chronic toxicity by inclusion of a TTC concept in the toxicological evaluation. And also, it increased use of chemical analytical method to identify extractables and leachables. This leads to cost reduction, and where there is a particular toxicological endpoint can be evaluated without testing, just by analyzing the extractable leachable data and doing a toxicological risk evaluation. So in the whole discussion, we have seen how a risk-based approach can help improving the quality of data and establishing safety of the device by following a risk-based testing strategy. With this note, I would like to end my discussion here and would definitely be ready for any kind of clarification in future. If you have any question, you can reach out to our team.
Thank you, Dr. Singh, for sharing your views on ISO 10993 standard. With that, we come to the end of this podcast. I would just like to remind our listeners that all our podcasts are available on our website. You can also subscribe to our podcast channel across all major streaming platforms. Thanks once again for listening, and we look forward to catching up with you on the next episode of Power in the Future.